We are back for our very first segment. And actually, it's kind of a little bit of a conversation just to set up our next segment coming up at 6:30. And a gentleman who has been on our program previously, and we're hoping to, what we're discussing and talking about, we're hoping to eventually do a entire Monday Night Talk program that will feature not only Dr. Joe Schran, who's sitting right before me right now, but some folks who will actually act out the Drug Story Theater that was showcased here in Marshfield not too long ago, as well as parents, right? Parents, and also some of the other folks who are involved. We're gonna do an entire show. We haven't mapped it out just yet, but Dr. Joe's kind of here to give us an idea of what we're going to be doing on this day, November 16th, 2015.
Thanks, Kevin. And thanks to all the listeners. I know some of you may have been at the show in Marshfield. Some, I hope, were also at Duxbury. And I hope you understand what it is that we're trying to do here. So Drug Story Theater has taken kids in the early stages of recovery from drugs and alcohol. We've taught them improvisational theater and psychodrama. And with that, they've created their own show about the seduction of, addiction to, and recovery from drugs and alcohol. It's pretty amazing. We've had Andy Short from Improv Boston, who's really helped us to do the direction, and Nicole Conlon, who is here with me now, mm-hmm. Right next to me, who has a hyphenated name,
Macomb.
Thank you.
Macomb.
Conlon
Macomb.
Such a bad man.
I practiced it a few times.
You did great.
Thanks.
Who's sitting right next to me, who, you know, will, I hope, be able to talk a little bit about the process of how we took these remarkable improvisations that were really, really the real part of the kids' lives. So I'm not saying that they're improvised, like just made up. The improvisation was a technique that they learned so that they could fluidly begin working with each other. And then the psychodrama takes their stories and puts them into show. And Nicole was able to craft those into a remarkable script with the help of her student,
Olivia Hughes.
So what we're going to do today, Kevin, is try to do just a couple of brief readings, little snippets of the show, just to give a flavor of really what's going on in Drug Story Theater.
I guess the first thing I'm going to ask you is this something that part of the conversation that we're going to hear today is about its growth, its potential, and maybe something that'll be expanded beyond just the communities here on the Route 3 corridor?
Absolutely. Drug Story Theater, you know, takes state-of-the-art understanding of adolescent brain, applies it to addiction. And the brain is the brain is the brain, Kevin. So we can be doing Drug Story Theater in Massachusetts, Michigan, or Morocco. And that's the idea. You know, my last name is Schrand, so it's true. I get Schrandios. It's okay. But I really think that we're tapping into something that's very powerful here that has the potential to take treatment mm-hmm. and make it into prevention. So that's really the slogan of Drug Story Theater. The treatment of one becomes the prevention of many.
And if you could tell folks, again, what it is, what you do when you're not here on the radio and when you're not doing Drug Story Theater, you are somebody who works in the field and you're seeing, you are on the front lines as to this opioid epidemic, the addiction that we are seeing, not only here on the South Shore, but around the Commonwealth and the country.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to be the medical director now, the chief of adolescent psychiatry for High Point Hospital and High Point Treatment Center, and created back in 2008 a program called CASEL, which is Clean and Sober Teens Living Empowered. And what we do is we bring kids in for a short-term residential, so they live with us for about 2 weeks mm-hmm. or so. And these are kids who are struggling with addiction. We detox them of drugs like heroin, opioids, alcohol, benzodiazepines. They can be on marijuana. A lot of spices going around. There was an epidemic of Xanax going around.
Wow.
So we take these kids and we detox them. All we're trying to do is remind them of their value. That's really the key of everything that I've been doing in psychiatry since the 1990s, is the idea that if we can remind someone of their value, we help decrease anger, anxiety, and sadness, because we remind them that they're part of a group. They're part of a community. So that's what we're doing at CASEL, and now we're applying that to this broader spectrum of taking treatment and making it prevention.
I guess I have to ask you, as we've seen throughout our lifetimes, the rebellion of youth, and you know, the rebellion leads to whether you're getting into some kind of mischief. To, you know, maybe back in the 50s, it was drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes. To nowadays, it's more or less anything you can do. What is it about wanting to have some kind of a euphoria with the help of a stimulant, whether it's a pill, whether it's a liquid? What is that?
Our brains are designed to seek pleasure. But the pleasure early on was not about drugs and alcohol. It was simply about, do we have enough food? Are we safe and have shelter? And do we have companionship?
Right. Then we moved out of the caves.
And we're now still seeking pleasure. But what we're doing in drug story theater is saying there's a different pleasure. There's the pleasure of drugs and alcohol, because it would be silly for anybody to say that it wasn't pleasurable. If it wasn't pleasurable, it wouldn't be addictive. Mm. But the price you pay, and that's what this show is all about in drug story theater, this particular show, the price you pay for that is the pleasure of trust. And there's no question about that in my mind. You cannot have both. You cannot have addiction and trust at the same time. Now, this isn't saying that addiction is a moral issue, just the opposite. It's a true biological condition, but we can do something about it. Look, there's a really important forum coming up here in Marshfield, Thursday the 19th.
Just a couple of days from now.
It is about whether there should be a marijuana dispensary in Marshfield.
Interesting.
And I'm telling you, folks, you've got to show up to this. There's going to be flyers about where it's going to be held, but you need to be there, because we need to really wonder, should we be having a marijuana dispensary? We know that marijuana is a primary gateway drug for all the opioid abuse. I'm not even sure why we were discussing it, but it's happening here. Matt McDonough is going to be there, Jim Cantwell, and the folks who want to put the dispensary in are going to be there. So please come to that forum. Look around for it. It's on the 19th.
I guess I want to kind of go back a second to what I had mentioned, as far as I took things back to like the 50s, 60s. We saw stuff. During my era, we saw marijuana. The marijuana wasn't nowhere near as strong as the stuff that they are growing today in the strands. They have found a way to make it even stronger than it ever was before. Back in the day, we might have had different types of chemicals, whether it was acid or tea or whatever it was, but it wasn't anything that was addictive. It was anything, it was just mind-altering for a couple of hours, and you woke up with a headache the next day. But what is it about today's drugs that are so much so that folks feel a need that it triggers an addiction?
Well, I just want to be clear. Marijuana is addictive. We didn't know that back then, but now we know. It is not just a psychological addiction. It is a physiological addiction. And I just want to explain, the shorter a drug lasts in your body, the more intense the withdrawal.
Okay.
And because marijuana, the cannabinoid of marijuana, can last in your body for 30 days, the withdrawal is really subtle, but it is a withdrawal nonetheless. After a couple of weeks, you're going to be cranky and irritable. You're going to be craving weed. You're going to have difficulty sleeping. You're going to have appetite disturbance. You are detoxing and withdrawing. And what I like to say is, the stuff that's around today, this is not your grandfather's weed. Okay? This is not your grandfather's marijuana. This is hydroponically and genetically altered.
Sure.
So it is...
be the best that it can be, if not more.
Well, it is so good that kids are like... getting addicted quickly, and then they don't get high that much anymore on weed. Mm. So they need something else. That brain is now primed. It's primed. So that's where we're at. Drug Story Theater shows that process of addiction. It shows the process of starting with weed and moving on, and then what can happen.
Okay, that's Dr. Joe Charan. He's going to be back with us in just a moment, as this is kind of a little bit of a precursor to our conversation coming up in just a few moments. You are listening to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And as we teased you earlier with Dr. Joe Schrand, he is still here, and we are now joined by Peter and Melvin. They are actors who are part of Drug Story Theater, and of course, Nicole Conlon McComb.
And I just want to interrupt for a second, Kevin. I just want you, these are not actors.
Oh, no, yeah. What,
these are real kids. I mean, if they were actors, we would be paying them a lot more money.
Are they not acting, but are they not acting out scenes?
They are. This is sort of the enactment of their real life, their real scenes from their real life. So it's really important because if people come in thinking these are folks who go all over the country performing, you're going to miss it. This is the real thing.
So how about, but there has to be some kind of a happy medium. Maybe Nicole can add some insight into this as well, because we have a friendly little discussion here. Nicole being an adjunct professor at Massasoit, also the playwright of Drug Story Theater. Welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thanks, Kevin.
So help us settle this disagreement between myself and Dr. Joe Schran makes an excellent point that they are not actors, that they are individuals who have lived this, but they are in fact acting out scenes. Help us settle this.
Okay, absolutely, my pleasure. These are not actors. They are people who have gone through addiction and who are now in recovery, and these really are their stories. So what would happen is these people do improv, and again, led by Andy Short from Improv Boston.
Thank you, Andy.
And I watch them do their improv and to reenact their stories, and we record their stories, and then I go home and I take the stories and I put dialogue to the stories, and then I come back and I say, is this what it was like? And they'll read it, and then actually Peter, I brought in the very first scene, and he said, it's like you were there. It's like you were there. This is exactly what happened. This is what people said. And so they're not actors, although they are acting out dialogue.
But they are doing a reenactment of something that they have experienced.
This is very true. So I'm just going to sit on the fence in between you and Dr. Schrand.
Could we call them reenactors?
Perhaps.
Dr. Joe, do you want to get in this?
They are part of a troupe. They are the performance troupe of Drug Story Theater. And Nicole is right. Everything got recorded by Michael Dubois, who is also a Marshall resident, who'd put everything on video. We've got all of this archived, so we can go back and say, how did this process happen? So yeah, actor, performer, whatever it is, they're real kids showing you, not just telling you, but showing you their lives.
If I could ask, what do you feel by having individuals who are part of the troupe who have lived this, what does that say to the folks who come and experience what they share on stage? Dr. Schran or Nicole, who wants to take this? Nicole?
Sure, absolutely. It really lends a sense of authenticity to the work. It's not just a playwright sitting in a room making things up. This is real. This is what happens every day to teenagers who are living in our communities.
Little do we know.
Yes, exactly. We might not know what's happening out there, but these people do, and they are so brave to share the stories that they have.
And what we are privileged to have is both Peter and Melvin are going to share with us little nuggets of performances. Dr. Joe, would you like to share with us, give us an idea of the first installment that we're going to hear at this moment?
So this first scene is the seduction part of addiction. And you'll hear, and it's based on Peter's real story. And I'm just going to turn it over to them now. It's Peter and Melvin in one of the first scenes of seduction.
Hey, man, can I buy some weed?
Nah, get out of here.
Come on.
Dude, what are you, in middle school?
No, I'm a freshman. I just really want to smoke.
Why?
Man, I got 20 bucks. Come on.
Ha, that ain't enough.
Fine, I got 40.
You got the money?
Yeah, I got it.
Cool, take a seat.
Are we going anywhere?
We're staying right here. You're gonna smoke me up.
Okay. Dude, your parents don't care if we smoke here?
Nah, they don't care.
So are we gonna do this or what?
Take a whiff of that.
Wow. That really smells nice.
You like that?
It's not too bad. Can we smoke some more?
Nah, I gotta save some. I'm having a party here later.
Can I stay?
You got more money?
Yeah, bro.
All right, so talk to us right now, Dr. Jote. Now, is there more to this? Talk to me, please.
No, what I'd like to do is ask talk Peter and them. Melvin. So, Peter, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about what this was like for you just to even reenact it. But what happened?
Well, at this time in my life, I was feeling kind of like left out, no friends. I was that one person who would be left out of the groups. So I felt alone, and things needed to change. And I seen these group of kids who had everyone with them, and I wanted that. That's something I wanted in life. So I wanted to do whatever they were doing to be able to have friendships. And, well, at least that's what I thought. At least I thought it was going to be a friendship. But little did I know it was going to progress in addiction.
And it was basically smoking marijuana. Is that what we were hearing in that particular scene, or was it something else?
Particularly, yes. In this scene right here is mainly marijuana, how my addiction started.
If I could ask you this. So it's, you feel as though acceptance into a group was kind of a main derivative. Is this something that a lot of your peers have experienced and that you've watched yourself?
Yes. I mean, acceptance is a huge thing, and I think it is for a lot of people because no one wants to be alone, and being alone is one of the worst things you could possibly feel.
Dr. Joe, is there something you want to kind of lend in here as far as the acceptance? This almost reminds me of a book you wrote in regards to the acceptance. You and I had a conversation, I would say, a couple of weeks ago about your book, and it was the first thing that dawned on me when Peter was speaking about finding a way to get acceptance into a group.
Yeah, that book is Do You Really Get Me? And it's all about how we begin to understand our own value through the eyes of others. And yeah, this is part of what's happening is some kids, you know, they feel that one way that they can be part of a group and belong is to do what the other kids do. And in this case, it's smoking weed. I just want to ask Melvin to step in on this about his experience about the first time he started using and what was going on with him.
Basically, same thing as Peter, you know. I wanted to get involved into the popular crowd, you know. I wanted to do what everyone else was doing. I was tired of being the quiet kid in the back of the classroom, you know, getting bullied all the time. So I said, all right, you know, let me just hang out with a new group of kids who do some crazy stuff and just do it, you know.
Dr. Joe?
And I wonder then if we can then lead into the next scene. So this next scene is like a rap poem. As the seduction has been progressing, and we now have a scene in which, who's going to read this? Melvin? Hey. Melvin's going to read about where things were headed. Go ahead, Melvin.
Look at your life now. You think you're doing right now. You played this game for such a long time. Think back to when drugs was the only thing on your mind every second of your time. Think of all the lies you told and the bags you sold. It was the only thing on your mind. You ask yourself, how do I get that next fix? It's your mind playing tricks. You're dancing with the devil. Your life's on a new level. I never thought drugs would be so incredible. You took my pain away, but your presence still remained. You never left my side all the times I was high. You were the voice in my head that always said goodbye. I knew it wasn't that time. I had one last chance. It felt like everything drifted so far. Your friends and family don't want to stay. They're scared for what remains. They called me insane. All I did was complain. Now you think death is the only option. That devil came. No signs of caution. The pain takes over. Now disease is talking. One side says walk away, but the devil said stay. We got a game to play. So I did, and I didn't win. The situation got worse. Jails, institutions, and death. The disease puts you to rest.
Of course, that was Melvin. He's one of two from the performance troupe who are here from Drug Story Theater. Did I do that well, Dr. Schran?
You are a quick learner.
Well, again, no disrespect intended, as I'm being a common person. And those who are listening at home, we want to make sure that we put it in a proper perspective. Now, was that something, Nicole, if you could kind of step to the microphone. Now, is that something that was written, that what Melvin just did, was that something that you helped him put together? Is that something that he put together? How did that work?
Well, I actually have to give all the credit right here to Peter. Peter came to us and said, you know, I wrote a rap about my addiction and recovery, and I want to show you. And then we said, oh, wow, that's really amazing. Can we use this rap? And he gave us permission to use the rap in the show. And so I really have to give all the credit to Peter, and maybe we can hear from him a little bit about writing that rap.
Yeah, what was that? What was it like writing that? And I got to say, is now, folks, again, this radio is not a visual medium, but Peter and Melvin were kind of coordinated between each other, where Peter was kind of pointing to Melvin, and Melvin's like, you want me to do it, or do you want to do it? And Peter was kind of pointing, saying, Mel, you do it. Go ahead. Kind of give us your thoughts as to putting together what we heard Melvin do.
So basically, one night I was sitting at home and I was just thinking of like what addiction was to me and what I felt. Like, I think of it as like addiction is like a devil. It's like a bad place. It's a bad thing. And it's stuck in your head and it never goes away. That's one thing. It never leaves. It's always there for when you're feeling down. It's going to come back and it's going to come right at you full force. So that's why I kind of look at it in a perspective as like a devil, a bad thing. And when I crafted this, I tried including that. I wanted people to hear and also be able to picture what was going on in my head at the times when I was battling with addiction.
Dr. Joe, you want to kind of jump in on here?
Peter, do you want to tell the folks how old you are?
I'm 16 years old.
Go ahead, as you will.
Melvin?
I'm 18.
And how old were you both when you started using?
I started using at 12 years old.
Wow.
Started using at 14.
And if I could ask each of you, where did it start and did it progress to a certain level? Because I think this is important for folks to know that, you know, whether we see things regarding a gateway, mm-hmm. or if it's a matter of where you immediately went from one substance to another. So, Peter?
For me, it started off so small as cigarettes. And then next thing you know, it progresses to marijuana. Mm-hmm. And at the end of my run, I'm an opiate user. I was addicted to opiates by the end of my run.
When you say, if I can ask, when you say opiates, was it strictly pill form? Or did you go to a snort or even injecting?
It starts, well, for me, it started as pills.
Okay.
And I think we all know where it leads from there.
Okay. And I ask you that respectfully, yeah. because, yeah, and if you declined it, I would respect it. I would thoroughly respect it. But this is what we're doing here, folks, as you are listening to, led by Nicole Conlon McComb and Dr. Joe Schran, joined by Peter and Melvin. We're talking a little bit about Drug Story Theater in the education to get the word out about the opioid, about the epidemic, the drug epidemic. Dr. Joe, you wanted to jump in here real quick?
Yeah, I did. I think this is really important, especially in the context that, you know, tobacco, marijuana are the gateways, but the opioid pills are the stepping stone to heroin. And it's really important people realize that. So what I want to do real quick is skip right now to a scene in the show that's more about the recovery process. Nicole is kind enough to read the part of the young woman, Shayna, who is in this scene in the show. But today I'm going to have Nicole read the part along with Peter. So this is a scene in a place where they are in a recovery treatment center in recovery.
Group was pretty chill, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
You were quiet. Are you doing okay?
I'm actually happy. My mom called me today.
And?
When I get out of here, I get to work at this dog place.
Like you sell dogs?
No, it's a daycare where dogs stay while their owners go away.
That's wicked cool, Shayna. Good for you.
I can't wait to make money.
I owe so many people money.
I'm gonna save so much money now that I don't have to buy drugs anymore.
Do you think you'll really stay clean?
Yes. I want my family back.
I know what you mean. My mom won't even come visit me. She kicked me out when I started selling drugs out of the house.
It's so weird to think that we would betray our friends and family for drugs. I never meant to hurt anyone. I was just having fun.
I knew what I was doing. I just didn't care. I remember this one time. I needed drugs so bad that I sold my mother's favorite watch. It was like a family heirloom or something.
Yeah, I spent my last $20 on spice instead of buying my mom a birthday present.
I wish I never wasted my time or money.
I wish I never ruined my relationships.
Well, here's our chance to fix it.
What does the doctor always say?
Oh yeah, hate the addiction, help the addict.
I'm gonna focus on oxytocin and try to make things different this time.
All right, that was Nicole and Peter. I want to give Melvin a chance. We asked Peter and got his take on what the graduation was or what his start was. Melvin, if you will, kind of quickly give us the start and where did you stay on one particular substance? Did you graduate before you ended up seeking recovery or going into recovery?
You know, I started off slow, you know, smoking weed as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually led to drinking. I ended up, you know, doing things I don't see myself doing, you know. I was always told that drugs are bad, and I was always that guy that would say I would never do drugs. But you know, freshman year of high school, that all changed. You know, it was that point in my life where I just didn't care, and I just wanted to do the next big thing to fit in with others. You know, and just, you know, be one of the cool kids. You know,
and the environment changed when you go from middle school to high school. That could be a real change where you want to, you go from the comfortable norm of middle school, and it's almost like you're kicked into another gear, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And so what eventually led to seeking recovery? Was it something that your parents saw and led you to? Or was it something that you felt that you were kind of heading in a direction that you didn't like?
Yeah, I mean, I realized I was heading in the wrong direction. And I said, you know what? I don't want this anymore. You know, I'm going to get into treatment. And that's what I did. And that's why I'm here today.
Again, you're listening to Monday Night Talk, and we're doing a little drug story theater. We have Dr. Joe Schran and Nicole Conlon-McComb. They're here. They're the heads of this. Of course, Nicole being the playwright, along with Dr. Joe. You're also a playwright in this, or are you kind of the as Ed Perry likes to call himself, the ringmaster and try to the cohesion to this and making sure that goes on. I want to ask you, Dr. Joe, kind of going back to what Peter had mentioned, and a lot of folks I don't think realize when somebody is addicted, and it was very telling when we heard Nicole and Peter go back and forth, what happens when someone is addicted, when they are, it's... people who are not addicted, is that something hard for people to grasp?
I think it's been very difficult for people to grasp, and I'm just delighted that people are now shifting their perspective. This is not a moral issue. These are not bad people who are using drugs. These are folks who have become addicted. One of the things, though, I you might have heard in the last line that Nicole said in this last scene was this word oxytocin, not OxyContin, mm-hmm. but oxytocin. So this is a brain chemical of trust. And oxytocin is really where the action is. Just so you guys know, if you come and see a drug-free theater show, and I hope you do, in between each scene, the kids do a PowerPoint presentation about what was happening in their brain. So they teach the science of addiction and why the adolescent is at the highest risk of addiction than any brain. So it is not a moral issue. We've had more than 2,000 kids come through CASEL, which is part of High Point Treatment Center. Not one of those kids started using drugs with the intention of becoming addicted, but many have. And not one of them starting using drugs with the intention of hurting people, but all of them have. And for that, they take responsibility. They didn't mean to, but they do. So what they learn is when they're using drugs, they're having an effect on somebody else's brain.
If I might ask, now both Peter and Melvin have performed, have done that. You both have had a chance to be in. What's it like being in front of an audience and taking what you experienced and sharing it and getting feedback? Melvin?
It's an amazing experience, you know. Seeing a lot of smiles on people's faces, you know. I'm known
you know, I have stage fright. You know, at first I'm nervous. I don't know how people are going to react. I don't know what they're going to say to me after the show. But when we do Q&As and, like, there's so many people asking questions about, like, you know, how did you get involved with this? How did you, you know, meet Joe and everything? And like, I just love questions like that. You know, I love when people are so interested in what I do.
I know Dr. Joe Schrader wants to ask a question. Can I let Peter ask a question first?
I just want to ask Peter, because Peter has not just done performance, but he's actually spoken with the governor, and I just want to get his take on what that was like.
What was that like? I mean, the governor, we've had the governor on, he's on the station, and he seems like a regular guy, but what was it like for you to be able to talk to him?
You know, it's a pretty scary feeling at first, because honestly, it's like you don't know what he's going to think, to your point about the opioid crisis. You don't know. And that just kind of feeling of like not knowing what he's going to think, if your opinion's right or if it's not, or that's the most nerve-wracking part. But once you do put your feelings out there and how you feel about this situation, and you can kind of connect and feel some sort of relation between it, it's like, it's a great thing, because you notice a change to the problem that is going on. And it's slowly, it takes time. If you can't just make one thing happen so fast in this kind of situation. It takes time. And like he really clarified on that. It takes time. I can't make things happen instantaneously. Mm. Everything takes time, but it will happen.
But so how many questions did he ask you? Was it just a matter of, hey, nice to meet you, Peter? Or what did he ask you, what it was like going through this? And was he aware that you are part of a performance troupe?
So basically what I did is I stood in front of a podium. I talked in front of his whole board and 400 plus people. Filled the Gardner Auditorium in the State House. Filled.
Wow.
And basically my job, what I had to do was tell my hope, my strengths, and recovery. And when I did, that's when I asked my questions. How are things going to be fixed? Is there going to be more treatment funding?
Mm.
More aftercare? You know, I asked a bunch of questions on those lines, and he answered them. Truthfully and from the heart, and that's what I looked for most.
We just got a couple of minutes left here talking about Drug Story Theater. Dr. Joe Schramm, is there anything that we want to, before we wrap stuff up here, anything that we want to make sure that we mentioned about any upcoming performances, whether after Thanksgiving or before, just a bit before, or maybe going into the new year?
Yeah, I would encourage people to go to our Facebook page, Drugstory Theater, because we will be listing performances. We're going to be trying to do one performance a month for the next several months with this group. What we're hoping is that by the end of this year, I'm talking about by June of 2016, these kids will have performed in front of more than 15,000 people. Doing one show a month. Drug Story Theater, Facebook, please go to it, like it, share it. This is a marathon, not a sprint. This recovery takes a long time, but we need to start doing the treatment side, but more importantly, the prevention side. That's what Drug Story Theater is about. The treatment of one become the prevention of many.
And if I can give each of you, Peter, Melvin first, if I can ask, give me your thoughts on, you know, keeping up with sobriety and recovery and also telling a story. I mean, what are those key 3 points that you're always striving for day in and day out?
You know, at the end of the day, all you have is 24 hours. And that's all that matters to me. You know, I wake up every morning, hit my knees and pray, ask for another year of sobriety, and that's what I get.
Excellent. Peter?
It's pretty basically the same for me. At the end of the day, I have 24 hours clean. For me, taking it day by day is what gets it done for me. I can't be planning what's going to happen tomorrow, because that could make me fall back in my recovery. I need to take it minute by minute, hour by hour, and if I make it through the day clean and sober, that's another day added on for me.
I want to give Nicole a moment to close things out now. Will there be time down the road that you're going to be doing more stuff with Andy Short from Improv Boston, and you and Dr. Joe Schran doing more writing and more working with more folks like Peter and Melvin?
Yes, we are. We are actually looking to start a second group and, in fact, are trying to recruit. So if you are interested in becoming involved with Drug Story Theater, you can go to our website, drugstorytheater.org, and there's a link where you can send us an email, even if you wanted to volunteer with our group. But we are starting the process of a brand new play. It will be based on the teenagers that we get and the parents that we get and their stories. Every new play will be their stories.
And I want to give Peter and Melvin a quick chance. If you wanted to possibly promote it with any of your peers, what would you say to anybody who's listening, any of your peers who might be listening, who might hear the podcast later on when it's posted, about getting involved if they are somebody who is on the recovery side of things and being involved? See, I like the working relationship because, as I had dictated earlier, that they both were appointing each other. Go ahead, Melvin.
You know, I would definitely tell everyone, you know, it's an amazing experience. It's wicked fun. And, you know, yeah.
Go ahead, Peter.
My opinion, get involved. Don't miss out on something so amazing and beneficial to your recovery.
And I just want to say, Melvin kind of got a little choked up, and that's cool. I understand, Melvin. It's okay. It's okay. Dr. Schran, if you could, real quick, say something to close this out before we end our segment.
First, I want to thank you, Kevin, for taking so much time to promote this. Really, folks, it's not just the opioid epidemic. It's marijuana. It's alcohol. We've got a whole group of kids at risk, and we can do something. Let's really get this going. The treatment of one becomes the prevention of many. Please become a Drug Story Theater follower, and let's get this done.
All right. We will step aside, and when we come back, and as I promised, don't forget, we will have Dr. Joe Schrand and Nicole back at some point in time to do an entire show on this. But that was just a little appetizer, and we want to thank both Peter and Melvin for also coming in and sharing their stories. We'll step aside when we come back. More Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.